It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The 87-page report says in 2015, two senior State Department officials, George Kent and Amos Hochstein, raised concerns to Vice President Joe Biden's office and even with Biden personally about the perception of a conflict of interest regarding Hunter Biden's role on Burisma's board. Quote, despite the efforts of these individuals, their concerns appear to have fallen on deaf ears. And warning of the risk of undermining U.S. policy in Ukraine, quote, officials within the Obama administration ignored the glaring warning signs when the vice president's son joined the board of a company owned by a corrupt Ukrainian oligarch. Senate Republican Chairman Ron Johnson and Chuck Grassley led the report, and no Treasury records show potential criminal activity relating to transactions among and between Hunter Biden, his family, his associates, and foreign nationals. A key Senate Republican calls the findings extremely troubling.
There's been a lot done, a lot of interviews. There's a lot to see there, and this is very serious.
A spokesman for the Biden campaign says this is all about the election. Quote, an attack founded on a long disproven, hardcore right-wing conspiracy theory that hinges on Senator Johnson himself being corrupt, and that the senator has now explicitly stated he's attempting to exploit to bail out Donald Trump's re-election campaign. The Senate Democratic leader blasted this probe.
Senators Grassley and Johnson should reimburse taxpayers for the money they wasted. The Johnson report should be relegated to the dustbin of history.
Senator Tom Cotton says there's no reason to believe these practices would change if Joe Biden's in the White House.
For decades, Hunter Biden and Joe Biden's brother have been coasting off of his public office, earning millions of dollars from Chinese firms and Ukrainian oligarchs.
In a statement, the Trump campaign says this report is further evidence that if Joe Biden wins, China and many other foreign interests with a financial stake in the Biden family win, too.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. We've been talking all week about, for several weeks about Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And we've been trying to decide which of the men are the better candidate. You know how I feel about it. I haven't hidden that. I would say that in the last few weeks especially, President Trump gets a daily dose of criticism. You know a lot about him. On the issue of Joe Biden, we see him in his basement. We saw him in the debate. Big smile. He's fit. Nice guy. His mind is slipping a little bit. But I don't really think that people have any idea who Joe Biden really is, because not many people are talking about that. But my next guest is, and so we're going to talk about that. If Joe Biden is going to be your next president, or if you have to decide if he is to be your next president, you need to know who it is you're voting for. George Neumeier is the author of The Political Pope and co-author of No Higher Power, which was Obama's War on Religious Freedom. He has served as executive editor for The American Spectator and Catholic World Report, also an op-ed editor for Investor's Business Daily, and a media fellow at Stanford's Hoover Institution. I could go on and on. You've seen him in various outlets writing for years. I've seen his name in print, but never met him until this morning. So, George, thank you for joining us this morning.
Oh, sure. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, let me just say that the book that we're going to talk about today is called The Biden Deception, Moderate, Opportunist, or the Democrats' crypto-socialists? That is the question. So, George, let me just ask you on a personal level. You've been writing for a long time. How long have you really, personally, been tracking Joe Biden, your own experience?
Oh, I've been writing about him off and on for many years. But this last year I thought it would be useful to put together a book that looks at his actual record and not the image that the media projects of him. The media presents him as a harmless moderate, but if you actually look at his career and his record, he's not a harmless moderate. He's a far left radical. And everything that he has done during this campaign bears that out.
Yeah. I want to take from your press release. You say with the selection of Kamala Harris as the vice presidential nominee, a Biden-Harris ticket could be the most dangerous ticket in American history. Why do you think that?
Well, you know, Biden, by his own words, has said that he, you know, if elected, he'll be the most liberal president in American history. And he's, you know, he selected as his running mate the most liberal member of the U.S. Senate and a San Francisco radical in Kamala Harris. And so there's no question that he's going to govern as a far left Democrat. He's going to push the country as far to the left as possible. And I see that as a, he talks about fundamentally transforming the country. You know, he represents sort of the final installment of what Obama started. And I think that'll turn America into a left-wing dystopia.
Let's talk about that for a second. Let's get very clear about it. You know, many of the ads that Joe Biden is running against President Trump are about health care, and certainly about the nomination of Amy Coney Barrett. And if she's, you know, President Trump has nominated her, and if she's nominated, you will lose all your health care. He doesn't care about sick people. He doesn't care about those of you with pre-existing conditions, and on it goes. So President Trump has no heart. Joe Biden is full of heart. Let's talk about what we know about what he embraces in regard to health care.
Well, he's trying to, you know, he's proposed something even more radical than Obamacare. You know, Biden care, seeks to push as many people as possible into Medicare for all, and that will have the effect of driving premiums up on private health care plans, and it will have a horrible effect on hospitals and doctors. You know, Biden has repeated Obama's famous lie that, you know, you can keep your doctor and your plan if you like them. Biden has said the same thing, but it's not true. If people are driven into Medicare for all because of the incentive of it being almost, being very inexpensive, the effect of that is going to be to drive up premiums for healthcare, for private healthcare.
The thing that I always think, to me, goes to the heart of the whole issue of that kind of healthcare is the fact that, yes, more people will be technically covered, but less people will get actual care. There'll be less doctors to do the procedures. There will be less of a pool of money. Choices will have to be made about who gets care and who doesn't. Long lines, long waits for tests and operations and all of that. And that's the part that I think surely people have to understand. You might get covered technically, but that doesn't mean you're going to get health care. It just means that you technically have it. You have it on a piece of paper. It's like having a marriage certificate and sleeping with your whole neighborhood. You might be married, but you're not really married. And I think that's what Joe Biden, I will never forget, and I'm sure you won't either, George, when Obamacare was passed and Joe Biden was heard off mic with President Obama saying this is a big blanking deal. So he's invested in this, isn't he?
As you say, you know, the price of healthcare is going to go up and the quality of healthcare is going to go down. And the ultimate, I think, the end game here for Biden and the left is to create a government-run single-payer healthcare system. And so that's, I think, if Biden is elected, we're going to take a big step in that direction.
Yes, and that equates to control. That's all about control. That's what we learned from the bits that we had of Obamacare. It's about, you know, going to a pediatrician and having the doctor ask your child if there's a gun in the house. It's about controlling people's lives and asking invasive questions and keeping records, and that, to me, is frightening. So that's the healthcare part of this. As he advertises these nice, warm, fuzzy spots about how much he cares about you, just keep that in mind. What other things, if you were to, in the order of their frighteningness, is he embracing that you think people need to know?
Well, I think, you know, through controlling healthcare, he can control people's morals. And I predict that we will see an abortion mandate under Biden care. He'll force employers to pay for the abortions of their employees, just as Obama forced them to pay for the contraceptives of their employees. And, you know, Biden has famously flip-flopped on the Hyde Amendment. He used to support the Hyde Amendment, which prohibited taxpayer funding of abortion. He now opposes it. And so I think Americans should prepare themselves for various edicts that will force them to pay for abortion.
Well, don't you think even further than that, whatever restrictions we have upon abortion right now will be under assault? Well, I don't know. You know, it depends on what happens at the Supreme Court. But from this administration, there will be multiple, just like President Trump has covered a lot of bases on the sanctity of human life by his executive orders and his various agencies. Joe Biden will do the same if he's president. That will enhance and support and encourage more and more ways of really ending human life. And that's not an exaggeration, is it?
No, it's not. He's completely in hawk to the NARAL and Planned Parenthood and the abortion lobby of the Democratic Party, and he's promised them that he's going to push the country in the direction of abortion at any time for any reason, including late-term abortions. And then, of course, he's you know, he talked about resuming the harassment of the Little Sisters of the Poor that took place under Obama. And so I think, yeah, people should gird themselves for a very aggressive abortion regime under Biden.
Yes. And then let's just switch to even the borders. We haven't talked about that in months because things are quiet at the border relatively right now and at the onset of COVID and all the shakeup here. So we're not talking about it. We're not seeing people invade and border patrolmen try to fight for, you know, for our sovereignty. But that's going to come back, and that's a concern for you, too, about Joe Biden's policy on our border. What is that policy?
Yeah, Biden has gotten increasingly radical on that issue, and he has said publicly that he's not going to deport anybody for the first 100 days of his administration. He said that he wants to basically adopt all of the policies of the Democratic-run cities that are sanctuary cities. So he basically wants to turn America into a sanctuary country. He's going to extend amnesty to millions of illegal immigrants. He wants to pay for the health care of illegal immigrants. So, you know, La Raza and, you know, groups like that are going to find a home in Biden's White House.
Yes, I think that's not an exaggeration. And we're not even talking about Kamala. Kamala's record is worse than his. He's more... Look, he's had kind of that big smile and handsome face has gone a long way. People have thought that he was a moderate. Do you think that Joe Biden was ever a moderate?
Well, it's hard to tell what he actually believes because he's been such a hopeless opportunist. You know, wherever the party goes, he goes. So in the 1990s, when Bill Clinton was in power and Bill Clinton was trying to triangulate the Republicans, Biden adopted that moderation, and it was during that period that he sponsored the crime bill of Bill Clinton. So, but you know, once the party moved to the hard left, he joined them on the hard left, and so it's really not clear what he actually believes. My guess is that, you know, in his heart of hearts, he is a hard left Democrat.
Well, I'm kind of with you on that. My impression has always been he just whatever is expedient. Whatever will win an election, that's his position. That's the way I have seen it through the years. You also talk about, in your book, about his restrictions on gun ownership, which is kind of a surprise to people. So where is he on that now? Oh, you know what? George, can you hold on just a second? There's the
sure.
Music, which means we have to take a break. So when we come back, I do want to cover a few more of these positions because I want America to be clear about what they're voting for. But then I also want to turn to Joe's, just his character, what we know about his history and his behavior. And the book, by the way, is called The Biden Deception, Moderate, Opportunist, or the Democrats' Crypto-Socialist. My guest is George Neumeier, and we'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We're they're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said, I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I looked, I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Oh, son of a got fired.
All right, that was Joe Biden. That was a clip that we ran many, many times during the Ukrainian scandal. That's when Joe was bragging about getting an Ukrainian official fired by threatening to withhold funds. And then, of course, they turned around and accused President Trump of doing the very thing that Joe Biden actually did do. President Trump didn't do that. My guest, of course, is George Neumeier, and the book is called The Biden Deception. George, before we go back to his positions on issues, let's talk about that particular moment. What can you say about that so that to explain it better than I just did?
Well, Biden, you know, used his power as the vice president to get rid of a prosecutor who was looking at the firm for which his son worked. And nobody can deny that, you know, that he was threatening, you know, to withhold U.S. aid unless they fired that prosecutor who was looking at Burisma, which his son was working for. So it's pretty clear that, you know, Biden went to bat for the interests of his son. And we now know from Senator Johnson's report that skittish Obama officials raised the issue directly with Biden, and he just blew them off. You know, he didn't take their concerns seriously. And this runs counter to the image that he's been projecting, which is that he didn't know anything about Hunter's activities. And in reality, he, you know, the issue was raised directly with him and he ignored it.
Yes. And since we've come onto that topic, let's stay there just for a second, because the news on Hunter Biden, Hunter, the youngest of Joe Biden's sons, the older one died of cancer. There are all kinds of narratives, I guess I could say, about Joe Biden and his family and his boys. Hunter is the one that's come to the forefront. And this particular Senator Johnson has been all over this. Let's talk a little bit, George, let's talk a lot for a second about what Hunter Biden has been accused of. You just gave an overview, but there's much more detail now that we know through the Senate's investigation. What can you say about that?
Well, the Johnson report reported that he got a direct payment from a Russian billionaire, one of the most wealthy Russians, to the tune of $3.5 million. It's not at all clear why he received that payment. The report just says that they had some sort of financial relationship.
The wife of the former mayor of Moscow is the person you're talking about, right? She's the one who sent him $3.5 million?
Right. Yes. So that's a huge, you know, scandal. But then there's also, you know, the Johnson report indicates that Hunter was giving money to people connected to human trafficking and the sex trade. And that may be just a sort of long-winded way of saying that he was procuring Eastern European and Russian prostitutes. But it's still pretty troubling. And it kind of fits, though, with Hunter's history. I don't know if you remember, he got caught up in the Ashley Madison scandal several years ago,
yes.
That dating site for adulterers. His name turned up in the hacked subscriber data of Ashley Madison. And at the time, he said it was a Russian setup. But in fact, a reporter, Patrick Howley, as I point out in my book, looked at the subscriber data and traced it back to Georgetown Law School, where Hunter Biden was then teaching. He had a fellowship at Georgetown Law School. So it's pretty clear that the Hunter Biden mentioned in that subscriber data was the Hunter Biden that we're talking about.
I was just going to say, George, we need to pause just to say that all of this is happening, not the first part you talked about, but this whole business of taking $3.5 million from Elena Buterina, the former wife of the mayor of Moscow, that this was happening when the Democrats and Joe Biden, as much as anyone, accusing the President Trump, of involvement and being owned by Moscow and being owned by the Russians. I just think the irony is pretty sickening. I could say rich, but it's actually sickening. That actually Joe Biden's son was colluding with the Russians.
Right. Yeah. And it's pretty sickening that we have to hear Biden bash the Trump family for allegedly enriching themselves off the Trump presidency when it was the Bidens who actually did that. The Trump family's made almost no money. I'm sure they've lost money off being involved in the Trump presidency. But in Hunter's case, he reaped a windfall because his father was directing Ukraine policy at the time.
We also, it's kind of like old news now, but when he was serving on the board of Burisma, he was receiving inordinate amounts of money, like monthly fees, payments. It was just stunning. I can't remember the amounts. But a little bit more than I make, I think. Maybe more than you make, too, George. I don't know. But
yeah.
just amazing amounts of money.
We now know that it's in the vicinity of $100,000 a month. Yeah.
And he had no experience with energy. He's supposed to be a consultant. He's just a bust. From his record, he was pretty much a bust out. Didn't he have to leave the military because of drug use?
Yeah, he got bounced from the Navy Reserve for cocaine use. He's been in drug rehab, I think 7 or 8 times. Ever since he got out of college, out of law school, he's been trading on his father's last name. The very first job he got out of law school was at a credit card company in Wilmington, MBNA, which Joe Biden had been doing the bidding for many years. And that job was clearly obtained for him by his father. He's been a problem from the very beginning, and he remains an albatross around his father's neck.
Well, his father doesn't seem to mind too much. I mean, honestly, when you look at it at face value, Joe Biden has not interceded. His son has been enriched, and it looks like maybe other family members have been enriched as well. What do we know about that?
Well, Biden, you'd never know this from the coverage. You'd think he came from a very humble family, but in fact, he comes from a family of lobbyists. His two brothers, James and Frank, are lobbyists, and they've been also enriching themselves off the Biden last name. James got a bunch of lobbying contracts involving construction in Iraq at a time when his brother was heavily involved there in Iraq, and James didn't have any experience in construction, and so he had Hunter, he got a job in an area where he had no experience whatsoever. And then there's the brother Frank Biden, who worked for a charter school management company during the Obama years at a time when the Obama Department of Education was giving out contracts to charter schools. And also, and Frank had no experience with charter schools whatsoever. So it appears that, the family business is lobbying, basically. And his sister, Valerie, has made millions of dollars off the Biden campaigns as a she runs a political messaging firm. So everybody pretty much in the family has been trading on Joe's last name.
Also, we talked about Russia, we talked about Ukraine, but even, I think, maybe more worrisome now because of China's rise to power is Hunter Biden's associations with Chinese, business associates who are linked to the communist government and the People's Liberation Army. So what can we say about that? That's frightening, because if Joe Biden's going to be president, he is not neutral when it comes to China, is he?
No. He's been an apologist for communist China for decades. Joe fought for China to get most favored trading nation status at a time when most Democrats were against that. One thing I point out in my book is that Biden was even an advocate for the China's coercive population control measures. He supported China's one-child policy. He went over to Beijing and he said that he fully understood that policy. It's pretty troubling that, we could go from a president who stood up to China to a president who apologizes to communist China. And then Hunter cashed in on that cozy relationship that his father had with the Chinese. He went over to China with his dad on Air Force Two and came back from China with millions of dollars from an investment firm tied to the Chinese government.
You know what's curious to me? Okay, so you've got this laid out, and the Senate report does too, at least on Hunter and on some other family members. There's been a lot of research on this, and obviously they've been made wealthy by on the coattails of Joe Biden's involvement in international affairs as the vice president of the United States and as a senator also. But what do we know about, I don't know if you can answer this, but what do we know about Joe's personal finances? So he has just existed on his salary in the Senate all these years and has not, you know, his bank account has not grown?
Well, there's some corruption involving Joe and MBNA, that credit card company in Wilmington I mentioned. They MBNA helped him get a house in Wilmington, a former DuPont estate. So, you know, he was using his position in the Senate to enrich himself to a certain extent. You know, he got that job for Hunter at MBNA. MBNA gave his campaign hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years. And he only got really rich after the vice presidency. He really cashed in then through speeches, through memoirs. And now he's a multimillionaire, and he's got multiple residences, and he's probably as well off as his brothers.
Very interesting. And that's the part that needs to be explored, too. I just want people to understand. Now, contrast that. Honestly, I just can't help but contrast that with President Trump, and you've alluded to this. President Trump has donated every salary, every penny he's taken as president of the United States back to some government entity or some group. Every month he donates his salary. And I think that they've just released his tax records and he's taking a beating on that. But how could logic just dictates that because they have restricted, they're watching he and his family like a hawk, and the chances of their family business having lost through all of this is pretty high. I don't know if there's anything quantifying that. Do you know?
Well, there's no question that, you know, the Trump organization has lost money since Trump entered the race 4 years ago. He lost all these contracts because of all the, you know, because of the cancel culture stuff. They lost a lot of business. And, even the New York Times report, you know, that just came out, if you take it at face value, it's pretty clear that the Trump businesses have been suffering. You know, the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. loses money every year, you know, for all the, claims by the left that, he's, you know, Trump is somehow enriching himself from foreigners who stay there. The truth is that it's a money loser. And it's all, you know, it's connected to the media's nonstop campaign against Trump and their portrayal of him as an ogre.
You know, George, you've probably been around D.C. as long as I have. I came in 2001 the first time. But it is common practice for people to enrich themselves here. It's just the people that don't are the rare. They're very rare. Most people get wealthy doing whatever it is they're doing here in this city. And so we have a president who has not done that, which I think is amazing. And we have a man who wants to be president who is the prototypical prototype of the person who comes to D.C. He's been in D.C. since he was, what, in his 20s as a senator? And we can see what his practices in terms of how he handles money and his family and enrichment have been. He has a record on that, and that is absolutely the point. Before we take this next break, George, let's go back to his policies. For instance, we just talked about China, his foreign policy. What could you just say in general, besides China, how would his foreign policy differ from President Trump's?
Well, you know, he rejects the America First foreign policy of Trump. You know, he sees that as contrary to the internationalist foreign policy that he favors. You know, he puts a lot of confidence into global and international institutions. So if, you know, his foreign policy would be characterized not by a defense of American sovereignty, but by a dissipation of it through reliance on international institutions and the United Nations. He's much more of an interventionist and an internationalist than Trump is. He favored the Iraq war. You know, he supported the Iraq war, which Trump didn't. And ironically, he opposed the good Gulf War. He opposed the first Gulf War, which was totally justified, getting Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. He opposed that, but then he endorsed the bad Iraq war. And if you go back to the Cold War, he was just terrible during the Cold War. He opposed Reagan's arms buildup. He opposed Contra policy. He was a nuclear freezer. He was a proponent of detente, you know, at a time when that was a pretty foolish policy. So, you know, if the Cold War had been left in Joe Biden's hands, it would probably still be going on.
You know, it reminds me of, was it Bob Gates, who was the outgoing Secretary of Defense under Obama? And he said that Biden, in his experience, Joe Biden had gotten just about everything wrong in foreign policy. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
He made that statement in a book. Yeah.
Yeah, over 50 years, Biden has been wrong on almost every foreign policy and national security issue that has come up. And the one undeniable success of the Obama administration was catching and killing Bin Laden, but Biden was opposed to that. He didn't support that raid. He didn't support the raid on Bin Laden.
And this is the way things should be being laid out now. People need to understand who Joe Biden is, and I don't think they have. I think he's being airbrushed right now, and that's why we're having this conversation. I know that's why George has written this book. Again, it's called The Biden Deception, and we have a little bit of time together where we're going to talk about Biden the man, things that you maybe have forgotten about him that you need to know. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
On the political scene, one of the Democratic candidates is Senator Joseph Biden. Have you seen the problem he's been having? He went around and made a speech. And apparently, he quoted a British politician. Took his speech and kind of paraphrased it as his own. And then the press got on him. And then he was charged also with taking part of Bobby Kennedy's speeches. And Biden says, not to worry. He reassured his staff. He said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself.
All right, that was Johnny Carson way, way back. The former Johnny Carson. And, of course, he's referring to the 1988 Democratic presidential primary where Joe Biden was caught plagiarizing so many different people. And that last little, if I have to explain it, it's not funny anymore, but that was a John Kennedy famous little quip, and he's attributing that to Joe Biden. I don't think Joe actually used that one, but he certainly plagiarized enough stuff that he had to drop out. My guest is George Neumeier, and the book is called The Biden Deception. George, what can you say about that 1988 campaign besides that little bit?
Well, it was, you know, really, it's defined his entire career. You know, he portrays himself as being authentic Joe, but in fact, his career has been haunted by plagiarism scandals and chronic lying. And that really was the high point of that. He not only stole Neil Kinnock's ideas, he even stole Neil Kinnock's biography. And it's telling that the person he ripped off Neil Kinnock, who was a British socialist. And that goes to one of the points in my book is that, Biden has adopted, in effect, socialism. So it's not surprising that he would have ripped off a socialist. But this really was a problem that went back to his, early part of his life. He got caught he was at Syracuse Law School, and he got caught plagiarizing at Syracuse Law School. He ripped off a law review article and put it into one of his papers, and he almost got expelled over that at Syracuse Law School. So this has been a problem of longstanding.
You know, speaking of Syracuse Law School, I just read this week, I was reminded this week that he, 33 years ago, that's the attribution here, he exaggerated his academic credentials at an appearance in New Hampshire. He said that he attended Syracuse Law School on a full academic scholarship, the only one granted, and graduated in the top half of his class and earned 3 undergraduate degrees. Well, the truth was he received a partial scholarship because of his financial need. He graduated 76th in a class of 85 and earned 1 bachelor's degree with a double major. So at University of Delaware, not at Syracuse Law School. That's just one example of many. But, George, I bet you have more notated. Give us another example if you can.
Well, one of the worst lies he's ever told is the one involving his first wife. For years, Biden said that his wife was killed by a drunk driver. That's completely untrue. A study was done, or an examination of the accident was done by the police, and they found that the the truck driver who hit his wife was following traffic rules and was not drunk. And in fact, the accident was caused by Biden's wife. And yet Biden for years ruined the guy's life by telling everybody that he was a drunk driver. And his family said that, you know, that gentleman spent the last years of his life, you know, in bitter solitude because of Biden's lie.
You know, there was a recent report maybe 3 weeks ago. I shared this on the air, and it was a story. I think it was the Daily Mail that interviewed Jill Biden's former husband. And he says that whole story about how Jill took on Joe, who was a fresh widower with two little boys, and this love story that they've told on the stump is not true. He's just now saying, the former husband is saying that, no, he and Jill, when they were married, went to work for Joe Biden's campaign when Joe was still married, and that Jill and Joe began an affair, and that and then tragically Joe Biden's wife was killed. He was left a widower, and then she left the husband, and then they got married. So that whole story is fabricated. I don't know what you know about that or if you can corroborate that.
Yeah, I think that what you just laid out is accurate. Biden basically, you know, according to Jill Biden's first husband, he busted up their home, it was a relationship that began as adultery.
But the story they tell is like they both enter into it, like they have this great love story, how she rescued him, this widower with two kids, and it's not how it happened. That's huge to me. Honestly, George, the reason I'm asking about these things is because I think this reveals character. It does reveal character. And these things we need to know about him. And that goes to all the stories, which have become like a joke, but they're not funny, of how he deals with women. What can you say about that?
Yeah, he's been, he presents himself as a, champion of feminism. But in fact, over the course of his career, he's been a harasser of women. One of the things that people forget about is that female security, Secret Service guards did not want to be on his detail because he had the nasty habit of skinny dipping in the nude in front of them at the vice president's residence. But then there's all these cases where he's, put his hands on women, making them feel uncomfortable. There's that, woman who ran for Nevada lieutenant governor, who said that she, one of the worst experiences of her life was when Joe Biden put his hands on her at a campaign rally, and really shocked her. And there are just tons and tons of stories along those lines. And then, of course, there's still the Tara Reid accusation of assault out there. Tara Reid has not withdrawn it. She still stands by it. She says that she was assaulted by Joe Biden. So it's kind of ironic that Biden goes around saying he's going to restore honor and decorum and dignity to the White House when, as vice president, he was constantly undermining those things.
You know, you almost wonder if that's the reason he pushed through the Violence Against Women Act, which is the names never portray what they really are. That's a whole bogus moniker again. But he is credited with passing through VAWA, the Violence Against Women Act. What do you know about that? Can you say anything about that?
Yeah, it's pretty clear that, he pushed that legislation as a form of exoneration for his misdeeds. You know, like Teddy Kennedy and Bill Clinton, he knows that he'll get a pass if he promotes feminism. I call these guys male feminist pigs. Feminists used to say male chauvinist pigs, but now there are these male feminist pigs who by day push feminist legislation and then by night are imposing themselves on women.
Let's talk about his tenure as chairman of the Judiciary Committee and maybe even just part of the Judiciary Committee. When people will understand, Kavanaugh came before the Senate Judiciary Committee to be confirmed. That's where all the nonsense happened. And before that, we had Clarence Thomas, who was completely shredded by that committee led by Joe Biden. And then before that, we had Robert Bork. So talk a little bit, tell people, because they don't know what Joe Biden's role was in those incidences. Can you paint the picture for us?
Yeah, in both the Bork case and the Thomas case, Biden played a role in politicizing the hearings intensely. He's really responsible for turning Supreme Court hearings into brutal, bloody ideological battles. He subjected Bork to an ideological inquisition. He played dirty. He portrayed Bork as like as a wild-eyed Puritan who's going to break down bedroom doors and things like that. When in reality, Bork was a judicial scholar of the First Order who was simply an originalist and didn't think that judges should legislate from the bench. But Biden, just turned that hearing into an ideological circus. And from that point on, whenever a conservative nominee has come up, the hearings have just turned into political litmus tests. And the same thing happened with Clarence Thomas and Biden. Biden, harassed Clarence Thomas and said, "Do you favor the natural law?" He was trying to force Thomas into saying that he was against Roe v. Wade. So, the politicization of hearings can really be laid at the feet of Joe Biden. He's the father of Borking. And so Amy Coney Barrett is a victim of that tradition, which was unfortunately started by Joe Biden.
Yes, and you can see lots of video of Joe. He has interacting in these hearings. It's not flattering. It does not make him look good. One of the disappointing things to me, among others, George, when I came to D.C. in 2001, was to, of course, interact with senators and congressmen. I will pick on the Senate for a moment. There is like this disease that seems to overtake them, and there are exceptions, but I don't think there are enough exceptions. They are treated very like they are royalty. Their staff treats them like they're royalty, and they become, I have seen so many of them become so full of ego. They have, and out of touch with reality, and with that isolation and ego and adulation, they do terrible things. And that's the way I see Joe Biden. They have a sense of themselves that's not based in reality, and they wield power. Right. That's the way I see Joe Biden doing some really, really bad things. Other stories, just random stories that you know about Joe Biden that we might not know.
I think what you were saying is true. But, going back to the Bork hearing, the reason he savaged Bork so badly is that he was trying to vindicate himself after that plagiarism scandal in 1987. He desperately needed to prove himself to the base of the Democratic Party, and the way he did that was by attacking Joe Robert Bork. And so that really was a form of political vindication for Biden. So, he has been, over the course of his career, a very low, transactional, egocentric politician. And there's very little positive legislation that can be attributed to Joe Biden. He's really just been a water carrier for the credit card industry in Delaware. And there's really nothing apart from the vice presidency, which was characterized by blundering of one sort or another. His resume is not impressive at all.
No, and I think one of the things that his handlers are concerned about is his temper. His temper is a legendary. He doesn't, and he comes out with some very nasty remarks. Like, what is that one thing that he says? You're a bald face. What he says, this phrase that he's used several times.
Lying dog or dog face
pony soldier. There it is. Yes, yeah. Whatever that means. But that's not a joke for him. He actually means that as an insult. That's what's so strange. Right. I mean, he's not like doing a Johnny Carson skit where he's making some kind of an outrageous made up. It's like he thinks that's a real insult and he delivers it that way. And he's lost his temper with voters as he's been campaigning, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah. He had that run-in with the auto worker in Detroit, who was asking him about his record on the Second Amendment. And he swore at the guy and called the guy a, filthy name. And, he has the irascibility of somebody who appears to be suffering from early-onset dementia or the early signs of dementia. Whenever he's confronted, he gets disproportionately angry. And I think that we may see that in the debates, the three debates. When he's confronted by Trump, I imagine, that irascibility is going to come to the surface.
And that kind of brings us to really the last thought here, George, and that is that the truth is that no matter what happens, if Joe Biden wins, he will not how could he possibly take on the full responsibilities of the presidency? At some point, things are going to be passed on, and it looks like they're going to be passed on to Kamala Harris. And so, and to others, how do you see, you say actually that it's like a stepping stone to power for the radical left. How do you see that playing out?
Oh, yeah, and Biden himself sees himself in that role. He's referred to himself as a bridge and a transitional figure, so he clearly sees himself as somebody who's paving the way for radicals like AOC and Bernie Sanders and Kamala Harris to take power. And I think you're right that, you know, we're looking down the barrel at a Kamala Harris presidency. You know, it's very unlikely that Biden could finish off his first term. So he's likely to hand off the presidency to Kamala Harris 1 or 2 years into the term. And she's even more radical than he is.
He is, as you said, she's the most liberal voting senator in the Senate, and that's saying something. And on another day, we'll discuss her record at greater length. But today, George Neumeyer, thanks you so much for this book, The Biden Deception. We highly recommend it, and it will be a great primer for you to share with people as we get ready to go to the polls and choose the next president of the United States. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.